You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, Alex and I welcome a very special guest to the program, John Filipavage, one of the producers and filmmakers behind the upcoming film, The Unauthorized Documentary of ECW. We're looking forward to hearing more about this project, not just the content, but also the challenges associated with creating this type of movie. And my name is David, and I'm joined today by my good friend Alex. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very embarrassed for this interview. Two filmmakers trying to get this project done. The Kickstarter page looks interesting, and excited to hear what this guy has to say.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm interested in the content of the ECW documentary, but I'm also interested in the challenges that you go through to make this kind of film. I think it's going to be fascinating using Kickstarter to raise money. So we'll have John on here in a moment. And Alex, I know that this is a special topic for you. You're a big ECW fan.
Yeah, I covered ECW in 1996. And I was a fan almost to it folded. And I love the company a lot.
Well, like I mentioned today, a special guest to the program, John Filipavage. He, along with childhood friend Kevin Kiernan, are putting together an inside look at the history of Extreme Championship Wrestling in a film entitled The Unauthorized Documentary on ECW. So what do you say, Alex? Should we give him a call?
Yeah, David, you bet.
Hello, John. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. This should be a good show. And let's start right at the top. You and Kevin Kiernan have been friends since you were 2 years old. Is that correct?
Yes, when the world was very small. I probably had been walking for very long. My mom used to walk me around the block. That was my world. And Kevin lived through like a little alleyway, and like a little. I lived in a row home, and he lived in an even smaller shack. And I saw him playing in it like a little swimming pool, and I didn't have one, and I was like, I want to play with that kid because I wanted to play with the swimming pool. And like we've been friends ever since.
That's pretty cool, and as I understand it, you've made films together before, but when actually took this project from, quote-unquote, we have an idea, to, you know, quote-unquote, yeah, let's do it?
My persistence and Kevin's teenage passiveness, or passivity, if that's the word. I'm a wrestling fan. I have been since I was about six. And I got into ECW in, like, 94, 95. I know by summer of 95 I was watching religiously on Sports Channel Philadelphia. And ECW really, like, I was waning as a wrestling fan as I got into high school. And I caught that, and it was just presented so differently, and it was so interesting to me. And I loved the niche-ness to it. I loved the Philly-ness to it. And Kevin Kiernan does not like wrestling. I shouldn't say he doesn't like it. He doesn't watch it.
Okay.
He has an appreciation for the artistic value of it, and he knows a lot about it because of this crazy project that's been going on forever. But especially back then, it was just like this thing that he'd put up with if I slept over and I put it on TV on a Saturday morning. And I was just like, hey, my initial idea was really crappy. And what I found out from talking to a lot of other documentary makers over the past year is your initial idea is never what you make. It's the seed.
Huh.
That evolves. And my initial idea was like, I was in love with going to the ECW arena and the whole the atmosphere of it. It was like, if you got general admission tickets, it was first come first serve, so people would camp out all day. It was like this crazy bizarro like shanty town with like cookouts and bonfires and just like ridiculousness. And I wanted to try and like document something about the ECW arena. So it was kind of fluff in a way, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't exactly hard-hitting. So I told him, let's do this, and I wrote down, like, four names, and the biggest, it was, like, journalists I wanted to interview, like Joey Styles, Bob Ryder from OneWrestling.com, because they did live coverage, and I think Dave Shearer, and then Todd Gordon was the founder. And Todd Gordon was my third interview, and I stalked Todd Gordon for months. I got his number through a mutual friend, and I would call him at his store, and I would pitch him the idea. And he's very polite, but he would put me off and say he was going to think about it. And, you know, he finally kind of shot me down, and then I was like, no, you know. So I moved to Philly to go to college in the fall of 2000, and that gave me a license to walk from my apartment to his jewelry store and talk to him in person.
Mm-hmm.
And they, please. And he finally said, you know what, okay, you know, I'll give you a shot. You've been persistent. And I would not leave his store until he gave me a date for the interview, because I was leaving Philly for winter break. And he told me January 10th, 2001, and I spent the whole month researching. And it was somewhere in there that I was like, I'm doing a serious documentary. Like, I love ECW, but there's a story here that has to be, like, taken objectively. And from there, you know, from there we went.
Yeah, and you can really hear the passion in your voice for ECW. Explain, though, to a non-fan, someone who maybe wasn't alive during that era who wasn't following wrestling, what exactly was ECW, in your own words? You said it's a much different product. It kind of goes beyond that, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's an awesome question. You know, I'm going to explain in my own words, but I have to steal something from one of our interviews, because I was always asking people, I always had a mind for this story as something that went beyond just, like, hardcore wrestling fans. I didn't want to make a wrestling video. I wanted to make a documentary about a subculture, and that subculture happened to be wrestling, and ECW in specific.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really like a subculture of a subculture. That's the way I really think of it.
Huh.
And there was, I think it was Mike Johnson, who's a wrestling journalist for PW Insider, and I think he was the one who said that ECW and, like, Paul Heyman, once that got rolling on TV, it was kind of like the wrestling industry's version of Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, the way, like, that, when you heard that, you're like, that is not what's going on in music, but I want it to be. And, you know, that was the way it was with ECW. It was the most innovative for its time, you know, and it had faults, but it was the most innovative, raw, you know, passionate, smart wrestling show for its era. And I mean, the Kurt Cobain thing is apt. I'm struggling to think of another real world example. It was just something in culture, in any culture, where you go like, okay, there's this deviation here. This is something different, and it goes down a road, and eventually, you know, things evolved in a different way. But for the '90s, that was the thing that smashed through the mainstays, you know, the corporate, you know, wrestling. It smashed through, and it was this indie rock band. I think Blue Meanie said it really well. One of his quotes in our movie, he said ECW was punk rock. It was wrestling's punk rock.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Now, this film you're working on, though, as you mentioned, ECW has gone through some deviations that's evolved over time. Are you going to look at the entire history of ECW or just the period of time in the 90s?
Well, ECW was around from, you know, Eastern started in 92. TWA started before that, was the forerunner. And, you know, I'm fighting somewhat of a losing battle to get more TWA stuff into the front of the movie. It's just a time crunch thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to cover the post-bankruptcy stuff in a quick manner, I would say, because the tent poles for the background, the history, if you will, is the Extreme Reunion that happened this year that we filmed for 3 days. So a lot of, like, current stuff will be from that, something that brings it into the year 2012. But I definitely want people to know what happened to ECW post-bankruptcy.
When did you become a fan of ECW?
I would say I started seeing it in 94. I was aware of Paul Heyman. I had Prodigy for like 4 months before my parents were just like, because I was a teenager at this point. I was like 12 or 13. So we had Prodigy, and ECW was the first internet wrestling company, which is something we talk about a lot in our documentary. They were the first to really brand themselves as a brand and not just, you love Hulk Hogan, and he's also in the WWF. It was like, you love ECW, and they also have these guys. I was a fan, I'd say, by sometime early in 95. I got caught up in the promos because that was another thing they presented. They did long form promos long before anybody else did, mm-hmm. and they were semi like shootish, you know, which for the time was very groundbreaking. They would probably, you know, Shane Douglas would go out there and call Ric Flair Dick Flair, and I was like, oh wow, like is Ric Flair going to be there? You know, I was just like, that's crazy. You know, because even at, you know, 13, I think I was, in 94 I would have been 13, I knew that they were kind of like, I guess you would say low rent, in the sense that it wasn't a big TV production, but I was like, well, maybe they're going to have Ric Flair on their show. And then after a while, I sort of realized, no, they just talk about the wrestling industry as if, you know, you can cross universes, which you couldn't do before.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I would say by the summer of 95, I was hooked.
What is your favorite year of ECW? Do you have one that you're partial to?
96 has a place in my heart. Everybody talks about 95, and I love 95. 96 was really cool just because I have so many personal memories. That's the first year I went to a show, an ECW show, when they came to my hometown. And I would say 96. I thought there was just interesting stuff going on there. You know, and it's the first complete year that I watched. So I went back years later and actually bought all the TV tapes and watched from the beginning. But that year really sticks out to me. I thought it was a very diverse year.
Do you remember the episode of television? And this is in 1996. This is something hokey that I always laugh about, but it's something that kind of sticks out in my mind about ECW. Tommy Dreamer had just been beat up by Shane Douglas and Brian Lee going into mm-hmm. November to Remember 96. And do you remember Dreamer making the phone call to the
phone call to Terry Funk? Yeah, and he had the like, I guess it was a cell phone back in 1996. So it's probably Paul Heyman's prop. Cell phone from his Polly Dangerously days. Yeah, he made the phone call, because they couldn't afford to book Terry Funk on that show when they announced it, so he just pretended to make a phone call, yes.
You know, looking back, and even at the time it was kind of hokey, but what was it about ECW, I guess, because, I mean, at the time we had the Blue World Order, we had a lot of hokey stuff, but wrapped up, we also had Rob Van Dam was being brought into the fold in the Taz-Sabu feud, which was very serious. We also had the Raven-Sandman feud that year that was very serious.
Yeah. And they also continued the threat of Dreamer versus Tommy Dreamer was kept for years, you know, through those years, too.
We had Mikey Whipwreck versus the Giant Paul Laurier. How was ECW able to balance the hokiness with the seriousness?
That's a good question. It's something that Paul Heyman gets a lot of credit for in our film. As far as, like, one thing I have to say up front, you know, is that this documentary doesn't have a lot to do with characters, storylines, and angles. You know, I feel like that stuff's been covered. That's very wrestling specific, and I wanted to make something, Kevin and I wanted to make something that could be accessible to everybody, that a deep fan could really enjoy, but a neophyte could at least understand and latch on the elements of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get that out of the way. Yeah, but Heyman is given credit in our film by several different people for the innovative ways he presented his booking and his TV. He kept a lot of plate spinning, I'll say. He was an amazing plate spinner. He kept everything up and going. And the way he interlocked storylines, too, which I thought was really neat. Maybe interlocked isn't the perfect word for it, but different storylines would converge. It wasn't, mutually exclusive or anything. I don't know exactly how he did it, so to speak, other than he had such a passion for it. You know, he's a fascinating guy.
Yeah, it's very interesting because you watch, you know, WWF from the 70s and 80s and then Eddie Gilbert stuff. You could tell his influence. Were you able to get an interview with Paul Heyman?
No. We tried very, very hard for a number of years. But over the past few years, I've kind of been fine with what I call the ghost of Paul Heyman kind of hanging over our film. Without giving away too much, I definitely feel that Paul Heyman's his point of view gets out there. We don't have an actual sit-down interview with him, but I do. There's a lot of people that we have, including a lot of office staff, that kind of give you a first person, and wrestling journalists too. We reached out to the wrestling journalists to give a perspective on everything, and they all dealt with him during that period of time. So you get a good perspective for Paul Heyman's story within this. And in fairness, you know, and Paul Heyman got to do the rise and fall he kind of narrated it in a sense. His interview was kind of like the linchpin to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not too bummed out about not getting that. But, you know, of course it would have been good.
Can you kind of give me, I guess, because you interviewed many wrestlers for this documentary. I guess, can you give me a kind of A to Z? Like, who's maybe the biggest name you were able to get? For example, I know you did interviews with the Sandman. And who's the guy that, oh, my God, he got an interview with this guy?
That's a good question. It's always interesting because wrestling, you know, when I do wrestling like interviews, they tend to really focus on the wrestlers. And my interest is more in, like, the holistic approach of it. So I'm always like, and the other thing is I think a lot of people think in terms of, like, star power, and that's not really how we approach the editing of it. I mean, we got Sandman and Raven. Those are probably, like, the biggest two. But I don't think that their story is any more or less important than a mid-card guy or, a mainstay like a Axel Rattner or a Balls Mahoney or Ted Petty and Johnny Grunge. Which is kind of, you know, the people that you want to know that I got. Ted Petty and Johnny Grunge, well, I guess Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge. Ted Petty is the real name of Rocco Rock. We got them before they both unfortunately passed away. And they were awesome interviews. And they're very, charismatic is such an overused word, but personable, I think, is a better word. I think people are going to watch this and be like, man, I wish I grew up in a neighborhood with those guys. Like, I think they'll put a smile on your face as they tell, you know, help to tell the oral history of what was going on in ECW.
Now, John, I understand that you have over 50 hours of footage. You conducted over 60 interviews, which really gives you some great context for your film. Were there some moments during the time that you did those interviews where you said to yourself, wow, I didn't know that? I mean, how much was there for you yourself to learn?
A lot over the course of it, especially when you talk to behind-the-scenes people. And, unfortunately, there's always people who can't wait to tell you stuff that they wouldn't have the balls to say on camera. And you're always like, that's great. I can't, you know, I can't, obviously that's not going to be in my film. Thank you. Yeah, there were definitely interesting moments. And it's funny. I'm in a forest for the trees scenario right now because I just did an interview where somebody said, you know, tell me something that was, like, a shocking tidbit in the film. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, the only thing I can think of is the segment I edited today kind of a thing, you know. Because I haven't actually watched the first draft stuff that we edited of the first half of the film in a few weeks because we're going, you know, chronologically.
Right.
I think some interesting things, a lot of, we dealt with a lot of the business of ECW.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the fan involvement, and also, you know, we have a section on riots that happened, on the Dudleys baiting fans, and, you know, were they over the line, and the heel heat that they got, and the situations they got the company into. One of the things that I think was actually as serious as a lot of the film is, you know, the documentary, there are moments that you're going to laugh out loud at. There's a gentleman named Dan Kowal who was, for the second half of ECW, he was one of the main, he booked the buildings and helped to run the business side of the shows. And he gives a list of the buildings they got kicked out of and why. And it's hilarious. And then he stops, and then he starts again because he remembers more. And it's like one of those moments where you're just going to be like, it's crazy. There's so many segments in this film where stuff happens and you go, wow, like, if you take yourself out of the wrestling head, where I think us as wrestling fans, we accept a lot of craziness because we're used to following it every day. But if you look at it as a normal person, you go, this is insane. How are they not out of business, like, 2 years in, you know? And every segment is like, it feels like every segment, one person goes, we thought we were going to be millionaires, and then the next guy goes, and then, like, 2 minutes later, it's like, and then this happened. And we all thought it was out of business. You know, that happened so many times when I was talking to people.
Well, I think documentaries are fascinating because, you know, you're dealing with real people. If you're a director of a fictional film, you can write the drama and you can cast and you cast it the way you want. Dealing with a documentary like this, the story does tell itself when you get into these interviews, doesn't it?
It really does. We decided really early on that we didn't want to do narration. It was part of our, like, we really wanted to take a bit, I keep using the word holistic. We really wanted to get as many people as we can from all different facets of ECW and ask enough intelligent questions and insightful and get insightful information and craft it together without our voices in it. And thankfully, for the most part, I mean, there's no narration. There are a few times we left a question I asked in just to give better context to what's happening. But for the most part, everything kind of connected together. You know, yesterday, actually, we did have one problem in trying to craft the end of ECW when WWE bought them. We didn't have somebody on tape that actually said they started a new ECW TV show. They just said they relaunched the brand.
Mm-hmm.
I think we spent a good, like, 40 minutes looking through footage to try to find somebody who used the term, like, who just basically spelled it out for regular people.
Right, right.
So we could understand it, you know? Right. It's one of those little, there's a million little things that go into editing that holds you up. And a lot of it has to do with, thankfully, we know the story very well at this point, but there's a lot of people, like, people will say two really insightful things and then there's an out-and-out lie. And they may or may not believe that lie, but it's not truth. I don't know if lie is the right word, but you'll have people who will tell us two really good things, and then we'll have to cut their comment and go to somebody else because they just said something, and you go, well, that's not accurate. I can't portray that, you know? Being fair is really difficult business.
I hear that. Now, seeing these guys years later, in mm-hmm. the condition that some of them are in, does it make you
yeah.
feel a bit guilty for kind of cheering the violence and cheering what ECW was?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the more interesting questions, you know, that I've had to think about, you know, in going out and trying to promote, you know, our Kickstarter and the possibility of this film is... I did love ECW, and everybody kind of starts the interview by getting me to talk about, like, how much I loved ECW and how it turned into an endeavor where I was like, I do love this, but I want to be fair and honest and, you know, not, you know, make a fluff piece. I don't want to make a hatchet piece either, but not make a fluff piece, make a serious documentary that people can enjoy. And there are times, especially watching a lot of the fan cam footage for B-roll, I don't know if you guys happen to see the video segment that we released to the public on ECW's Violence.
No, I'm sorry, I have not. What ECW Violence is what? What is that?
No, it's a segment of our film that we released. It's a segment on Violence that we've kind of nicknamed Violence Continues, and it's out on several websites now.
Okay.
The easiest way to find it is you just go to, you know, Kickstarter.com, search ECW. That takes you to our page. I'm sure we'll talk about the Kickstarter then, but
yeah,
but it's on the Kickstarter, so you get a sense and a feel for at least some of the more serious issues we're tackling and how we're going about tackling them. My point is that to do this segment, I had to pull a lot of violent footage, and in general, I have to watch a lot of violent footage for about ECW, and it's like every time I see an unprotected chair shot, I just cringe now. It's something that I haven't felt really comfortable with since probably about, like, 2001, 2002, honestly. It just, a lot of times, especially towards the end of ECW, it was so unnecessary, but it was the niche that they went to. There's definitely a divide as they went nationally, and they lost a lot of their technical, you know, wrestling and kind of, you know, stayed with the mainstays who did the violent stuff, like your Tommy Dreamers. You know, Axel Rottenball's Mahoney, New Jack, and several others. The Jack Victory was there, you know. They really started to narrowcast towards the end. I mean, they still had, you know, your Jerry Lynn's and your Justin Credible's working, but there was so much unnecessary violence. And that's another thing we cover later in the film is the escalation, the flaming tables, the balcony dives. They started to really keep going. See, once you start...
Yeah.
It's so hard. Like, what do you do? You're at a point now where, if New Jack doesn't do a dive, well, people walk away going, you know, yeah, he bled, he went through a table, he got hit in the head twice with a chair, but he didn't do that cool balcony dive I saw on TV.
Yep.
So we got to start doing that every week. You know, like, that's a problem. That's a problem, you know. And I see these guys, I saw them at the reunion, and some of them are good, and they've kind of gotten out. Like, Stevie Richards was a joy to talk to, and he's kind of doing his own thing and taking bookings on the side just for spare change and whatnot. I mean, in the case of Extreme Reunion, he came in because it was in Philly, and he's from Philly. He wanted to see his family. But there's a lot of other guys, you know, it's kind of like Mickey Rourke and the Wrestler kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And that's tough because I like a lot of these guys.
Right.
I do. You know, and it's a bummer. I was very gutted by some of the footage that we shot on at Extreme Reunion. I didn't even know it was that good until we got home and I got to look at it after resting because I was just like, wow. You know, you hear some of the stories and the things that people say, and when you see it in person, you go, wow. You know, I worry for some of these guys. I worry for very seriously.
Just clear it up for us. Who owns the footage to a lot of this ECW material? Were there any problems with WWE? I thought they owned the rights to the ECW matches, no?
Yeah, not yet. We're being very careful. I mean, you can document anything, and that's what we're doing. I mean, the Kickstarter, we don't even have the official name of the movie up on Kickstarter. It's just the factual statement, a documentary about Extreme Championship Wrestling. But we won't have the name, but that has to do with needing some funding. But, yeah, we elected to license RF Video's fan cams because they shot them and they own them. RF Video has this weird thing where they can license stuff because they had a pre-existing contract. And you can see that around the Internet. I know Kayfabe Commentaries used some television footage for a shoot interview they did with Hack, Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
We elected not to go with TV or pay-per-view footage just because, you know, down the road, you want to keep your options open for stuff. I mean, RF Video shot that, and they own it, and I feel comfortable using that stuff. And plus, I thought it fit well with the look. It's a grittier documentary, you know?
Right.
There was nothing, ECW was gritty. There's nothing flashy about this, you know what I mean? It's a gritty story, so I hope that clears it up for you.
Well, was there anything that you or anybody say anything to you during the filming of this where they said, you know what, let's not talk about this or don't shoot this or don't mention that?
Yeah, from time to time. Not as much as you would think. I can only think of two or three times where a guy said something and then said, hey, don't use that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it's within reason, I won't. You know what I mean? Like, I can think of one thing in particular where somebody called Paul Heyman a liar, and then they didn't want that used, which is funny because I think now they wouldn't care, but I ended up not using it anyway, because I had, like, probably 25 minutes of people saying that, and it just isn't necessary to beat a point. Nothing too big, honestly. Like, these guys were pretty open about stuff. Like I said, people would tell me stuff off the record, or they'd say, turn the camera off and I'll tell you the real story kind of a thing. But none of it was, like, imperative to our narrative, so I wasn't pissed. You guys asked about Paul Heyman, and of course everybody asked about Paul Heyman. There's actually one guy who was in the front office. I don't want to say his name just out of respect to him. I talked to this guy several times. I met with him. He told me so many fascinating things that I would have loved to have used. It doesn't change the narrative a lot. He ended up deciding, you know, he declined to do the interview after talking to me for a while. And that's like the one thing that I'm like, oh, I wish we could have had that guy. It doesn't really change the narrative at all, but it would have added some really interesting things to the last year of ECW, I'd say.
What did you think of the other two documentaries that have been released on ECW? Did you use them at all, or did you totally disregard them?
Oh, when they first came out, I was crushed. Only because we started our documentary in, you know, March of 2000. And, you know, we were 19 when we started it. And life gets in the way, and we didn't have money. You know, we had to, you know, get regular jobs and support ourselves. And, you know, every once in a while, we'd scrape together a little bit of money and try to finish stuff. And people who knew that it was happening would offer us deals that didn't quite work out for us. You know, I held on to this for a long time. I had a lot of offers just to sell it as for scrap, so to speak, just sell it as shoots. And I thought that would be kind of disrespectful to the people that I interviewed. I wanted to finish it, and it's a big deal to finish it. So when those came out, it sucked because you're like, oh, I did that. But you really come to realize, like, well, they helped us a lot because a lot of the rise and fall is they don't tackle a lot of serious issues. And or they touch on it and kind of gloss over it. You know, I'm thinking of stuff like the fire at the ECW arena, the Eric Kulas incident, the fallout to that, that, you know, caused the pay-per-view to be canceled for an amount of time, a short amount of time, but it was canceled. There's, like, a lot of little things that I just didn't, a wrestling company wouldn't get in, wrestling people in a wrestling company wouldn't get into, like, stuff I was talking about earlier, like the violence, like why these guys cut themselves for their job for little money or get hit in the head or what their thinking was. It's kind of just glorified. I think they helped us in a lot of ways. I think they're great wrestling videos. I don't know that people, I don't want to come off as condescending, but at the same time, like, I know people call them documentaries, and they do document, but I don't think that they're unbiased documentaries. Mm-hmm. I think that they're made by people in the wrestling industry, and that's cool. As a fan, I enjoyed them, because I like ECW. You know, Rise and Fall, I own a copy, you know. But I don't think that they're really going for the same goal as what we were going for, which, you know, works out for me, you know.
World Wrestling Entertainment did put out a very good documentary, but it's, I mean, you can kind of see that they did have their own agenda in mind. For example, Chris Jericho wrestled for ECW basically the summer of 96 for you know, a handful of shows.
Right,
yet he
right.
was very, very much featured in the documentary as compared to someone like Lance Storm, who wrestled there for many, many years, but Jericho was a bigger star in WWE, and so they put his story ahead a little bit more.
Yeah, they edited it for perceived star power, which is not something that we did. We're going to introduce you to a lot of people you didn't know were involved with ECW. They were made by wrestling people, and I don't mean that. I'm a wrestling fan. The thing is, like, I don't think anybody outside of, like, being a deep wrestling fan is going to watch that, even though I think that Rise and Fall, you could make sense of that narrative. I didn't feel that way with Forever Hardcore. I was showing it to somebody a few years ago because I was like, oh, man, our Todd Gordon interview was shot in his office just like that. Like, it looks like they stole our footage. Damn it, you know? And they couldn't make heads or tails of it because it was too – you had to be like an internet or newsletter fan, which I didn't realize because I am one, you know? And they were like, they kept asking, like, what did this mean and why did this happen like this? And I was like, oh, okay. Like, in a way, it kind of made me feel better because I was like, all right, well, you know, good. There's still, you know, a story, parts of a story that just don't make sense or aren't told. So that really helped us refocus.
Now, Forever Hardcore and Rise and Fall of ECW stand up on their own. Now, do you believe that your film works as a companion piece with those films? Or is it totally independent, and you don't need to have seen those other two films to understand your story and appreciate your film?
Oh, no, I think it can. Oh, our goal has always been for it to stand up on its own. I mean, the goal is to try to get this in film festivals, and my goal is to make something intelligent that a wrestling fan can be proud of, but feel that it's objective, and that a non-fan who is willing to take a chance will go like, well, that was an interesting story. I might not want to watch wrestling, but now I know something about the industry in the 90s and this company that really changed things. You know, it was kind of the catalyst for the wrestling boom in the late 90s. They at least played a big part. Their ideas did, and some of their talent. So I think it stands up on its own completely. I mean, that's always been the goal. That's what takes so long with editing, is meticulously piecing things together so a normal person understands.
Now, you said, you know, you're a fan, and I'm a fan of ECW as well. Was there one interview with a wrestler or maybe a fan or an office member that kind of changed your perception of what you thought ECW was going into it?
Ed Zahn, early on. I found out about Ed Zahn through a comment that Todd Gordon – actually, no, I knew of Ed Zahn before that. That's not because I asked him directly about him. Ed Zahn was one of the early promoters of ECW, who was actually the promoter of record the night they had the fire at the ECW arena, and he ended up leaving the company shortly after. And I thought it was only fair to get, you know, his response to what Todd had said. And he gave me a lot of insight into early ECW and the way things worked that I thought was really interesting. Dan Kowal was another one. Gabe Sapolsky, you know, I think we did the first major quote-unquote major interview, on-screen interview that Sapolsky ever did. And, of course, he went on to do some stuff booking-wise. Yeah, it wasn't one interview, but it was a lot of tidbits here and there that you got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a puzzle. Every day we sit at the editing bay trying to put pieces of a puzzle together to make, you know, the, you know, what we consider the perfect film.
Is there a film that kind of inspired the concept for this film?
No. I always liked documentaries. I mean, going back to, like, I can remember seeing Hoop Dreams for the first time and being just completely blown away, and Hoop Dreams is, like, 2 hours and 40 minutes.
This is a great film.
I was probably, like, I think I saw that in 95 it came out.
Yeah.
And I wore out the tape. I actually broke the tape because I saw it in the theater, and then I bought it, a VHS, and then, like, my VHS just started eating it after a while. I used to watch it so much. I mean, there's nothing, I mean, I went to school for writing for film and television, so for me, part of the fun was crafting the narrative over years. The narrative has been through so many different, there was a while where we thought we were going to follow people around. We shot some footage, but ultimately we just thought, you know, there's so much to cover. It's such an ensemble cast, so to speak, that, like, I had to settle. Even in the last few weeks, we've been, like, flipping around. This segment doesn't go in this category. It goes here. What leads into what best, you know?
It sounds like a really interesting film. To get it funded, you created an account or a page on Kickstarter. Explain how Kickstarter works.
Sure. Kickstarter.com is a really cool site that was started a few years ago that helps artists of all types, you know, be it filmmakers, documentary makers, you know, painters, ballets, anything. They help artists of all types reach, you know, everybody and get funded, hopefully. And what they do is you set up a page, you go through a rigorous process. It took like 3.5 weeks to get a page up.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I mean, they're serious. They have to verify bank accounts. They have to make sure, you know, that you pass, you know, you can't exactly put a bestiality film pitch up there and try to raise money. So they have to make sure. I was a little worried about the content, like maybe stuff in our trailer is too violent or something, but they passed it. The payment system is handled by Amazon Payments, so it's safe. Kickstarter is the, you know, we looked at other sites that are similar, but Kickstarter is kind of the brand name right now. It's the most reputable.
Yeah.
And basically, we give you a pitch and, you know, look at our site. There's a lot of information and videos on it. And we say, please, we need money to, finish our film. Here's why. And if you pledge to us, we'll give you stuff. So it's not like free money. In our case, you know, if you pledge like $10, that gets you access to the backers site where we put exclusive clips up. I think $20 is a movie poster plus the backers site. And then $30 is you get the finished DVD. To be one of the first people to get it, plus the movie poster, you know, stickers and postcards and whatnot, and it goes all the way up to like $10,000. If you really want, myself and another producer and an ECW wrestler will come to your house and watch the film with you, and you kind of get a director's commentary for free. And, you know, who knows if a wrestler will be happy with what I did, but the wrestlers that we selected are safe, because when it was first pitched to me by our project manager, I was like, that's a horrible idea. I don't want to do that. and he's like, no, no, no. And he came back to me with a bunch of names. And it's your Stevie Richards and Blue Meanies of the world, which, you know, I'm happy to call those guys, you know, I'm friendly with them, mm-hmm. You know. And I would be happy to travel with them, you know, to your house and watch the film with you or a group of your friends. If you want to throw, if you want to pool money and throw a party, it's all in the room of us getting, you know, getting funded so we can finish the film, which is the most important thing to me. You know, I can talk to until I'm blue in the face about the things that we are doing as far as editing, but to get it out, we really need the funding. And the way Kickstarter.com works, you have to reach your goal, or you get none of the money, and you guys don't get charged. So if you pledge today, you will not get charged until A, we reach our goal, and B, it would be after September 20th, because I think the Kickstarter runs until September 19th at 11 p.m., if I'm not mistaken. So we're over halfway there now. But, you know, it's a big uphill climb. You know, this is the most nerve-wracking month of my life. To be this close after this long and be like, oh, man.
And finishing a documentary, there is a lot of costs associated with it. Editing and travel costs, you know, licensing, producing and shipping the DVDs. In the worst-case scenario, though, John, if the project doesn't get funded, what happens to the film? What happens to your footage?
We have to reassess. I mean, it's definitely been batted around about what do we do. It pushes everything back at the very least. it really messes with the amount of penetration that we can get as far as getting this out to people, to as many people as possible, getting it in film festivals. You know, I want to say we'll think of something, we'll figure it out, but I'm really focused on, you know, showing everybody what we're doing and our passion and getting them to see the videos that we have put out, and hopefully, you know, little by little, you know, it's not going to be one person. I don't think it's going to be one person with a big pledge. I think it's going to be convincing people one by one to throw down $10, $20, $30, you know, up to $50. You know, just today we had some, you know, $100 pledge, a $75 pledge. Once you get into that range, it's about, you know, free tickets to the premiere in the Philadelphia area and stuff like that. I think 50 is everything from before plus a T-shirt. So it's gonna come down to the wire. I know it is. You know, I'd love to say we'll get funded tomorrow, but I'm hopeful that somehow the film will come out no matter what, but it really, really cripples us at this point not to be able to finish, you know, and we're shooting for December if the Kickstarter comes through.
Right, I actually did check out Kickstarter today. The tier structure is fascinating. Check it out. There are some really neat things that you'll get if you do contribute to the film. And John, if the project is successful, are there any plans for you to do other wrestling-related documentaries? Are there any other stories that are burning inside of you can't wait to film?
I've had that idea, but I'd have to do it with a different partner. I think Kevin Cannon would kill me at this point if we didn't branch out and do something. It's so tough to deal with wrestling personnel. It really is. I mean, this has been like a very long boot camp for us. I think that whatever we tackle next will be so much simpler because it won't be within the denizens of, you know, the wrestling world where you've got to watch what you say and who you talk to, and you've got to have an angle for everything as far as how you approach stuff. But honestly, because, you know, my partner's never going to hear this interview anyway, there are several territories I think would be fascinating. I just don't know if enough people are alive to justify or to tell a complete story. I love the history of wrestling. One of the cool things about doing this documentary is to be able to say, like, I documented the actual history of a promotion, not just like, oh, they ran a couple of cool angles or here's a neat character that headlined.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little interested in Portland. Portland's kind of become the thing that piques my interest because it's Don Arwin was running that since I think the 50s or 60s until the early 90s. I've seen some footage and it seems like a really interesting territory. And I know Piper's still alive. I apologize. I think Buddy Rose is dead, and I hope I'm not screwing that up. He was a mainstay up there. Dutch Savage was. That would be interesting. I'd like something a little bit more critical of Memphis. I really did love Memphis Heat, but I would have liked something a little bit deeper on it. You know, and again, I loved Memphis Heat. You know, I thought what those guys did was awesome. And I don't know. I mean, everybody loves Calgary. You know, like,
yeah.
I'm sure somebody could do an interesting documentary about Calgary if you got a Hart family. See, that's another thing, though. If you read any of the books about from Jericho's book to, like, Brett's book, I can't imagine navigating the minefield that is the Hart family to get the real story there.
Right. But it would be fun to hear even just the road stories of getting from Saskatchewan
yeah.
to Saskatoon, right, or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, certainly there are things, you know. I mean, when we were shooting early on, we actually went to a few ROH shows in their infancy because we knew those guys. We had interviewed Dave Sapolsky. We had interviewed Rob Feinstein for our project. And we went to a show to pick up a few interviews. I dabbled with the idea of trying to shoot some early ROH stuff because I thought it could go somewhere, you know. It just didn't end up happening. And, you know, it would have been tough anyway. But and I don't know what the audience is for, like, an ROH bio documentary pick, you know.
Some stupid from a wrestling fan's opinion, non-filmmaker. I find King of Indies 2001 very interesting because it was kind of like a linchpin for so many things.
Yes, absolutely.
That is professional today. I mean, you had first. I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago here for OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, and something that a lot of people I don't think even know is that wrestling on both nights was figure four wrestling newsletter writer Brian Alvarez, on top of last week we had NWA World Champion Adam Pearce on. He was in the King of Indies. Brian Danielson. I mean, if...
Loki, Samoa Joe,
Four people would buy it, and I'd be one of them. But, I mean, just looking back at that show and where all the guys are now would be very interesting to me.
Some of the, you know, not just, I think Dave Meltzer was there covering it with some wrestling Hall of Famers he was sitting with, as I recall. That show is the genesis of ROH coming out, and that style kind of coming into vogue is kind of like an artistic reaction to ECW in the Northeast. It was a very important historical show.
Yeah, he was actually sitting with Brett Bastien that show.
Yes, thank you.
I'm an observer subscriber, so.
I was for years, so yeah. I interviewed Dave Meltzer's in a film. All the wrestling journalists from the 90s that covered it are in the film, and they're interesting because they all fall on different political fault lines, or I don't know if political would be the right term, but they all come from a different space, so to speak. So it's very interesting. You know, they kind of give us the framework for the arguments within our film, which I think is interesting.
Are you a fan of today's wrestling product?
Oh, man. I don't hate it, but it's not quite what I want. I like the niche things. I was an ECW fan. I was an early ROH fan. I like things that aren't overproduced. I have trouble. I don't know that I've ever sat through an entire TNA program. It's just overproduced to me. I don't quite like, you know, and I've heard that they've gotten better in the last 6 months, so maybe I should give it another try. I'm not a huge WWE fan, too. I don't like the humor, the idea of trying to do more entertainment and not the serious fight. I like the serious fight promotion. I like the two guys are going to go at it, and this is a big deal, and the title means something. You know, if I was a fantasy booker, I would do things differently. But having said that, I love CM Punk. I watched it since 2002. Same goes for Bryan Danielson, or Daniel Bryan now. I'm still not good with that. So I pop in from time to time, especially YouTube is my friend. If something important happens, I definitely try to search it out on YouTube. I'm not a weekly watcher, especially with this documentary. I'm not home ever. So it's hard. I'm jaded. I'm one of those jaded fans, you know, that's like, I've almost seen too much. When I sit down to watch wrestling, I tend to watch older stuff. I tend to watch a lot of territorial stuff from the 80s or 90s All Japan or, you know, stuff from earlier in this decade, you know, that's notable.
So, ultimately, do you feel like your film is going to embody the legacy of what ECW was?
That's one of the main questions we asked people when we restarted, when we shot the extra 15 hours this year. What's the legacy of ECW? And there's a lot of opinions. I don't think it's one thing, but I do hope that you get the whole scope of what they were, where they went, you know, why they might have failed, you know, and what they meant to people. Because they meant more, that company meant more to people than any wrestling company. You know, and as a whole, I would at least argue that, you know. There was an emotional connection there. That was your home team, which is, you know, people follow wrestlers a lot of times. They don't follow promotions to that level. So it was brilliant marketing, and it was a shooting star.
Thank you very much for doing this interview. Tell our listeners where they can find information about the film. And is there a website or Twitter that you would like to promote and have the fans know about?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. This gets confusing. We have BWC Films is the Facebook page where we post any appearances or anything that's going on that we're doing, you know, stills of the film, whatever. I'm also on Twitter. The handle is at BWC Film without the S. That was already taken. The website that we're focusing on right now is thekickstarter.com. Just search ECW. You'll find a documentary about ECW with our logo is a barbed wire fence with a blue sky. And that's really, you know, that's the main platform. We're going to launch a website after the Kickstarter. But for right now, we just want as many people to get their eyes on. All the information is on Kickstarter, you know, from what we're doing to videos to what the pledges are and, you know, everything. So just go to Kickstarter.com, search ECW.
Well, thank you again, John, for being here with us today. Really enjoyed the conversation, and wishing you and your partner here, Kevin, the best of luck finishing the film, your documentary on ECW.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Yeah, great questions.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you too.
Hi, Alex, great having John Filipowicz on the program today. First of all, thank you to you for setting it up, and I hope you're getting excited to see the film.
Last week when we brought this up on our show, I kind of said I was kind of tentative. What else could be said about ECW, I believe, was my exact quote. And so that's why I felt like it was important to give this guy the opportunity to discuss what this new film was going to be about. And David, he certainly answered all of my questions. Now, did you have any questions going in that he answered throughout the course of this interview?
Well, exactly what you had said last week. What is going to be different? Because they have done two fairly mainstream, fairly highly visible documentaries, but it sounds like there's definitely a different tone here, a much more documentary-type feel of the business of ECW. I'm looking forward to that. And the thing that really stood out to me about this interview, though, Alex, was he did feel a bit remorseful when he talked to some of these wrestlers because we celebrated the violence, but now we're seeing some of the impact of that.
You know what's very interesting about documentaries, David, is that I'm a huge ECW fan. I've seen many hours of footage. But for someone like yourself who hasn't seen that many hours of footage, yeah, but you are interested in the story of ECW, you can devote some time and check out the story, and you can really get a good story. And that's why it's important for the filmmakers to produce an accurate and somewhat true story of what it was. And, you know, if this guy said he's able to capture a more true assessment of what ECW was, I mean, I can't see how all wrestling fans can get excited, David.
Yeah, I agree. Because, well, you made the point during the interview, Chris Jericho featured during the WWE documentary of ECW, and he really wasn't a major player. And so this seems more like, if you're an ECW fan, this is a film you want to see, to put everything in context.
I kind of got that impression as well. And when you're not working for a corporate entity,
right,
you can be a little bit more truer to what you feel and what the story is kind of developing in front of you.
Hey, did I tell you, by the way, that I worked a show at the ECW Arena?
I knew you presented Minami Toyota with an award at the ECW Arena for Chikara Pro Wrestling's, I forgot the name of it, but it was their women's shows that they were putting on that weekend.
Right, right, yes, and just a thrill to be at the arena, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, they closed it down within the next 3-4 weeks, so I was thrilled to, you know, get to work there, even had a very, very small part in the show, but it was really a thrill, and just, again, Alex, thank you again for getting John Filipowicz to be on the program today. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you, and then one more thing is that I actually tried to write a column about what the ECW arena meant to professional wrestling, because it had a little bit more history than just the company of ECW. And it was incredibly hard because so many different companies have been through there. And like I said, even you presented an award there to Minami Toyota, who is an incredible, legendary professional wrestler. So it's just quite incredible how much history that company had and that arena that they wrestled in had.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can also email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, OWWCOM, to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also post directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
We hope you enjoyed the program. And we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well that's okay.